God is incomprehensible. Incomprehensible means beyond one's comprehension, impossible to understand, or not able to be understood. We can't understand Him. We cannot do that. So is all this studying about Him? We've been in this series of God's attributes for a long time. Are we just wasting our time because we can't understand all that there is about God? A.W. Tozer said, we tend to bridge what we do not know from something that we do know. We tend to bridge what we don't know from something that we do know. All the gods of mythology takes a human, which we're familiar with, and then extends the bounds and strengths and powers to some superhuman person. God isn't like that. God isn't Captain America. God isn't Iron Man. God isn't somebody with superhuman strengths and stuff like that. He didn't start out that way, and He will not finish that way. He will not finish. God is not like us. If God is incomprehensible, there ought to be some things that God has to say about it from His Word. You remember in the Ten Commandments, one of those says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Not just a graven image of something else that you want to worship, but a graven image of God. And we're going to see later on that some people knew God, but they still tried to make some other images of Him. So anything that we would make as a graven image of God, that's going to be limited to our own imagination and to our own creativity that we can't understand about Him. We tend to reduce God to manageable terms. Romans 1, 21 through 23 says, for although they knew God, okay, that's important, although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. That's what we tend to do, is put God in manageable terms. You have heard people call God the man upstairs. If you've done that, don't ever do that again. That's bad, that's wrong, shame on you, and stop it. Because God is not a man, and God is not upstairs. And it's wrong to refer to Him as that. So don't do that. And we ought to correct people when they refer to the man upstairs. That's putting God in human forms. That's making ourselves, claiming to be wise, we became fools and exchanged the glory of God for images resembling mortal man, as an old man sitting up in the clouds deciding who he's going to throw a lightning bolt at. Paul tells us again in 1 Corinthians 2:9, but as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who love Him. We think about that. God has prepared a place for us in heaven, and we can't even imagine something that God is creating. And if we can't imagine what God is creating, how can we imagine God Himself? So we have some serious things that we can't understand. Well, that's some things that Paul had to say. Let's look at how God speaks. God compares Himself to us. And God speaking says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Then keep going, God speaking again. To whom then will you compare me that I should be like him, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see, who created these? He who brings out their host by number, calling them all by name, by the greatness of his might, and because he is strong in power, and not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary, and his understanding is unsearchable. Now that's God speaking about himself. God telling us about him. It's one thing, and I trust Paul because Paul's writing under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. But here's God telling Isaiah, say this. And he says it. Romans chapter 11, back to what Paul said. Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and how inscrutable his ways. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor? The implied answer is nobody. There's not anybody that understands all of God's ways. There's not anybody that can give God advice. I have said before, people have said, well, when we get to heaven, we'll be able to understand everything and do that. I don't think so. Now that's just, okay, that's from the second chapter of Scott. Okay, you have to understand that. But I don't think so. Because when we get to heaven, God is still going to be God. And I'm still going to be me. And I don't think that, and with all of that, God doesn't owe me an explanation. I have probably said, you know, I have some questions for God when I get to heaven. I want to know why. Well, there may be an answer and there may not be. But God looks big picture. But at the same time that God looks big picture, he still looks individually. And that is incomprehensible to me. I can't even begin to put my hands around that. So, we know that no one can completely understand God and all his ways. He is incomprehensible. So maybe we should just agree that we can't understand him and stop here. We can go home early tonight. But God goes farther than that. He wants us to learn of him. He wants us to seek him. And he wants us to know him, to learn of him and seek him and know him. So God can only be known as he reveals himself to us through nature. Romans 1:20, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen and being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. I I'm going to show you a mountain picture in a little bit, and you've seen a lot of mountain pictures, and you know that that means a lot to me. But I have learned more in the past few weeks about the foot and the incredible engineering marvel that a foot is. That we don't think, that at least one of us had never thought about stuff like that. Did you know, Dr. Bowers is not here, is he? Okay, so I can tell you, and you're not going to know any difference anyway. But from what Dr. Stevens told me, the foot operates, if this were my left foot and this was my big toe, okay, it operates, there's redundant systems of tendons that go in there There's two tendons that run around this side, and that's one of the tendons that he fixed when he went around that. But one tendon pulls your big toe down so your foot can move out that way. And then there's another tendon that runs up here that pulls the outside of it up that does that. That's an incredible thing. And he was worried about having to tie both of those tendons together. And he said, you'll still be able to move your foot that way because of the redundant systems that your foot has. But it wasn't as bad as what he was afraid it was. And so he just repaired the one. And I still have redundant systems in my foot. At least I think I haven't been able to move it. But he tells me that I will. It's an incredible thing. And to say that this just evolved over eons of time, if anybody studies and looks at the systems, there is a book, and I didn't have this written down, I should have, called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. And it's by a couple of doctors. Does anybody know which one I'm talking about? Yes, Philip Yancey is one, and there's somebody else that's with him. But it's an excellent book, and it talks about the blood system. And it's incredible. And to read about stuff like that with just this engineering marvel that we're able to walk around in for a while. God reveals himself to us through nature, through other parts of nature. I am very thankful. Todd has invited me to go with him. Todd has even challenged me, actually several times. Some of those times I probably won't go back there. And that's Todd. When you see a red shirt hiking, well, that's Todd, and that's one of the places that we've been. And it's magnificent to see the creation of God in places like that. But at the same time that we have the wonders, there's still places in the God-forsaken barren wasteland of West Texas that this is what that looks like. And you see the horizon and all the stuff that's there. It's those areas that my granddad said God just used those parts of the earth to hold the rest of the earth together. But even in that creation, God has put things underground that too many times people don't think of. And lots of people that live in those God-forsaken barren wastelands are very wealthy people that live in God-forsaken barren wastelands. But God has things fixed like he wants them fixed. Well, God can only be known as he reveals himself to us through his word. He teaches us through his word. Psalm 119:105 says, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Through his word, he says, look out, be careful. If he's a lamp unto our feet and a light to our path, then when we go out when it's dark and we need a flashlight, that's be careful. This is a dangerous trail. Be careful. There's a snake over here. Be careful. There's a whatever. God guides us through his word. And then 2 Timothy 3:16, all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. Now, it's important that we learn things from smart guys. A.W. Tozer wrote the book about the attributes of God, and we're basing a lot of things that we have, and I'll have an official A.W. Tozer quote in a minute. Even smart people like that, I'm thankful for them. But God speaks, and his word teaches us. We learn about God from God himself. And there have been too many times that at least one of us in this room has taken that for granted. and not thought. These are the words of God. It's one thing to read A.W. Tozer, but it's another thing to read God. And at least one of us needs to not take that for granted. God can only be known as He reveals Himself to us through His Son. Jesus said in John 14:7, "If you had known Me, you would have known My Father also. From now on you do know Him, and you have seen Him." So we can know what God is like by studying Jesus. John 10:30, Jesus said, "I and the Father are one." John 10:38 says, "But if I do it, even though you do not believe Me, believe the miracles that you may learn and understand that the Father is in Me and I in the Father." And yes, I know that's not up there. And the next one's not either. John 14:10 says, "Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in Me? The words I say to you are not just My own. Rather, it is the Father living in Me who is doing His work." So we can learn about God through Jesus. Well, here's the A.W. Tozer quote that we need to learn. "The yearning to know what cannot be known, to comprehend the incomprehensible, to touch and taste the unapproachable, arises from the image of God in the nature of man. Deep calleth unto deep, and though polluted and landlocked by the mighty disaster theologians call the fall, the soul senses its origin and longs to return to its source." The soul, the inner part of us, senses our origin and longs to return to its source. How can this be realized? The answer of the Bible is simply through Jesus Christ our Lord. That's how we learn of God, is through Jesus. We know the Father's heart through Jesus. We look back at the things that Jesus did. Jesus healed all the people. He even, when He healed the 10 lepers, and remind me, how many lepers came back and told Him thank you? One. And the other 9 just went on. What Jesus didn't do was unheal the other 9. Well, you ungrateful people, teach you a lesson. And He could have and would have been justified in doing so. But that's not His heart. We know the Father's heart through Jesus feeding the people. He cared about people's physical needs. He cared that, yeah, there are no McDonald's that are anywhere close to here. We need to feed them. Who's got something? Okay, here's some fish and here's some bread. Let's feed 5,000 men plus their families with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Well, Jesus, that many's going to need to go to McDonald's. This is not going to cover it. But He cared about their needs. Jesus cast out demons. Demons that were bothering people. Jesus cast them out. He cared about people. We learn about God through Jesus dealing with the woman caught in adultery. And I've always wondered. That always says the woman caught in adultery. I always thought adultery took 2 people. And it's the woman that was caught and not the man that was caught. And I don't always understand that. But He dealt with her. He showed grace and mercy to her. He challenged the ones that were about to stone her, that had rights to do so according to the Old Testament. And I wish I knew exactly what He wrote in the sand when they started dropping their rocks and they left. And then Jesus told the lady, "That's okay, don't worry about it." No, He didn't tell her that. He said, go and sin no more. He didn't say, that's all right, we're going to throw out the rules for you. No, he said, don't do that again. We learn about the Father's heart when Jesus dealt with the rich young ruler. The rich young ruler came to Jesus and he said, I've kept all the commandments. I've been pretty good. And Jesus knew him. And he knew his weaknesses. And he said, okay, go give everything you have to the poor and then come and follow me. And the man went away sad because he had great riches. Jesus knew that. And what Jesus also didn't do was saying, well, wait a minute. Come on back. You know, you could be a great tither in God's kingdom. You could be a great member of RBC. We would love to have you. But he didn't reduce he didn't lower the bar so that those that might have a harder time getting over it could go ahead and get over it. He didn't lower the bar. So we learn the Father's heart through how Jesus dealt with people. We can know about what we can know about God depends on our relationship with Him. Paul told us in Corinthians, these things God has revealed to us through the Spirit. Capital S, Spirit. For the capital S, Spirit, searches everything, even the depths of God. Then a verse later, two verses later, now we have received not the Spirit of the world, small s for Spirit of the world, but the capital S, Spirit, who is from God, that we might understand the things freely given us by God. So we can understand some things about God, but what we can understand about Him depends on our relationship with Him. Now, that means there's some people that just don't get it. The natural person does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him, and he is not able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. Have you ever, well, at least one of us in this room has thought in talking with somebody, what's the matter with you? Can't you see this? Can't you understand? And the thing is, no, they can't. Because they are spiritually discerned. And they don't have the Spirit. And we tend to look at things, we tend to look at things in the world as a lot of times we tend to expect things from little puppies. If you bring a little puppy into your house, that puppy is going to poop in the floor. That's just what puppies do. And we think, that is horrible, you dumb dog, what's the matter with you? No, you got to teach him. Because that's what puppies naturally do. And they don't realize that, oh, you don't poop on the carpet? You have to go outside to do that? They don't know. That's just what puppies do. And we tend to look at all of the rest of the people around us that think, why would you talk like that? Why would you say things that ugly? Why would you have that kind of thoughts morally? Those kind of immoral thoughts. Why would you have... That's just what natural people do. And we can't expect them to walk in the Spirit because the Spirit teaches us things that those without the Spirit don't understand. So we learn from God and we learn that some people just don't get it. Now, He wants to reveal Himself to us. And in order for Him to do that, we must seek Him. Jeremiah 29:13 says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Then in the New Testament, in Luke chapter 11, and I tell you, ask and it will be given to you. And from my understanding, in the Greek, that says, keep on asking and keep on seeking and keep on knocking. So, and I tell you, ask and keep on asking and it will be given to you. Seek and keep on seeking and you will find. Knock and keep on knocking and it will be open to you. For everyone who asks and keeps on receives, and the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks, it will be opened. So God has given us some promises of saying, if you do seek Him, you'll find Him. If you seek Him with all your heart, and if you keep on knocking, and if you keep on seeking. Acts 17:27, God did this so that man would seek Him and perhaps reach out for Him and find Him, though He's not far from each one of us. That's from Dr. Luke. And then from Isaiah, seek the Lord while He may be found. Call on Him while He is near. And from the psalmist, Psalm 105:4, look to the Lord in His strength and seek His face always. We can never understand all about God. He is incomprehensible. And we can learn a lot about Him in the ways that we've talked about. But if that is all, then we can just be people who know a lot about God, but don't really know Him. When I was in junior high, somebody gave me a chess set. And nobody in my family played chess. We just didn't play that. When we played games with my papaw, we played checkers. And we knew how to do checkers. But all those checkers with all the different shapes and everything was amazing. Well, I decided I was going to learn how to play chess. And so I read the back of the box and I learned every move that all those different pieces could make. And each one, I knew all the rules, I knew all the things, and I set up the chessboard and sat there and thought, okay, so how do you play? I know all the rules, I know all the moves that all those pieces can make, but how do you play? And I took my new chessboard. We were up in the mountains of New Mexico where my family used to go, and we'd spend 4 or 5 days up there. And I had my chessboard set up there, and I learned all those rules and everything. And it wasn't until we left and I packed up my chessboard and went back to Canyon, to where my grandparents lived, and my cousin Mike knew how to play chess. And I said, come here, let's play chess. I want you to teach me how to play. And we sat down, we set everything up, and he said, okay, I'll move first. And he moved one of the pawns. And he said, now you move. And I said, so you just start moving? And he said, yeah, don't you know how each one moves? And I said, yeah, I learned all that. I know exactly. And so we just started playing chess. I knew all the rules, but I had never played chess. James McDonald said that learning about God, the learning is for the loving. We learn more in order to love more. But we must move from just learning about God to loving God. Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. I'm afraid too many times we just focus on the mind part and we don't go farther. Max Lucado is one of my favorite writers. He uses word pictures, and I love his pictures. Listen to this. This is called Hearing God's Music. Let's imagine that you want to learn to dance, if you're not a Baptist. Max didn't say that. Okay. Let's imagine that you want to learn to dance. Being the rational, cerebral person that you are, you go to a bookstore, you buy a book on dancing. You take the book home and get to work. Finally, you think you've got it, and you invite your wife to come in and watch. You hold the book open and follow the instructions step by step. You even read the words aloud so she'll know that you've done your homework. Lean with your right shoulder, so you lean. Now step with your right foot, and so you step. Turn slowly to the left, and so you do. And you continue to read and then dance and read and then dance until the dance is completed. And then you plop exhausted on the couch, look at your wife and proclaim, "I executed it perfectly." "You executed it all right," she sighed. "You killed it." "What?" "You forgot the most important part. Where's the music?" "Music? You never thought about music. You remembered the book and you learned the rules and you laid out the pattern, but you forgot the music." "Do it again," she says, putting in a CD. "This time, don't worry about the steps. Just follow the music." And so she extends her hand and the music begins. And the next thing you know, you're dancing and you don't even have the book. And we Christians are prone to follow the book while ignoring the music. We master the doctrine, we outline the chapters, memorize the dispensations, debate the rules, and stiffly step down the dance floor of life with no music in our hearts. We measure each step, calibrate each turn, and flop into bed each night exhausted from another day of dancing by the book. Dancing with no music is tough stuff. So, yes, let's do learn all that we can about God. Learn about His attributes and learn about His characteristics. Learning is good. But knowing Him and loving Him is the important part. Now, I'm probably going to get in trouble, but I've been in trouble before. I can tell you a lot of facts about Renee. I can tell you about her growing up as a farmer's daughter, about her horse accidents, about her family, about her many basketball accomplishments. Back in the old days, they used to have free shot contests during the tournaments. And in one of those that Renee won, she made 24 out of 25 free shots. I challenge anybody to do that. Most professional basketball players can't do that. I can tell you what other things. I can tell you about her facing a fierce mountain lion that's up there. But knowing all those things doesn't mean that you know Renee. We've laughed together and we've cried together and we've had a lot of fun times and we walked through some hard times. And I practice this so I wouldn't cry. We've had a lot of good talks and a lot of time just sitting together in complete silence. I know her in ways that you don't, because I have experienced her as a person. I know the facts about her, and I've seen how those facts have shaped her heart and her life. But I've walked through life with her. And what we promised to each other over 37 years ago has grown more than I knew was possible. But that love didn't come by learning her basketball statistics. It happened as we did life together. I know her. But the question tonight is not, do you know Renee? The question tonight is, do you know God? Do you love him? I didn't ask if you knew a lot about him. I didn't ask if you could list his attributes. I didn't ask how many verses you've memorized or how many doctrinal issues you can explain. But do you know him? That's the important part, is knowing him and loving him. What I want us to do this evening, how I'd like to close, is just sing a little chorus a couple of times. And then I'll dismiss us. And then if you don't know God, and if you'd like to, well, I'm going to hang around up here in the front for a little bit. And you can come down and talk to me, and I'd be happy to introduce you. But let's sing our prayer.